On this week's Widnes Rugby Chat, leading rugby league journalist Matt Shaw joins us to talk IMG, Halifax, Super League and transfer rumours. Plus we hear from Alan Coleman after the win against Dewsbury. So on this week's episode, we're joined by Matt Shaw, rugby league guru, rugby league journalist, transfer gossip king of West Yorkshire. And he's also, for his sins, a Halifax fan. Matt, thanks for jumping on.
Well, first things first. Well, thanks for having me, first things first. But just to clarify, I am impartial. I've no... absolutely no bias towards any club ever. Contrary to the belief of everyone on social media who believes I hate their club or I'm biased towards another. There we are.
Right.
But yes, well, I am a Halifax fan.
I'll record that as like a 5 or 10 second thing, and you can put it on your on your Twitter. Obviously, you're local to Halifax. They're having a difficult season this season. I know the chairman's recently stepped aside as well. What's sort of the context behind things at the moment?
Where do you start? I think the simple answer is it's a team that's coming to the end of its lifespan, end of its cycle. It's an old team that obviously, I know it won the 1895 Cup last year and has delivered some brilliant success over the years. You know, they've properly punched above the weight. But maybe the warning signs were there, not making the playoffs. And then obviously off the back of that, this year they recruited the likes of Greg Eden, Gareth Widdop. So for me, an older team became older. Didn't really fix the issues that were there. I mean, Widdop's played well, I think. I think Widdop's played well. But they've obviously had Keyes and Jaffray. So it's kind of created a problem as much as it's been a benefit. Eden left after 2 months and barely played a game. So, I just don't think they really addressed the issues that they had, particularly in the pack. They've got a workmanlike pack, but they can get rolled over by the bigger packs, and it has remained an issue. And that's where they're at off the field. The chairman leaving, I don't think there's anything too much untoward or sinister to read into that. That was simply a personal thing, like every club. Finances are tight, aren't they? But I don't think it's necessarily anything too deep there. They're simply, combined with a load of injuries that everyone has, they're just having one of those years that every club has. That, you know, you can have a freakishly good year, you can have a freakishly bad year, can't they? And facts are in that predicament at the minute.
We were quite surprised that they offloaded Dan Murray earlier in the season. He's been one of the better forwards for Widnes this season, and I know that it was sort of compounded. I think they got 2 or 3 injuries the week after they got rid of him. I guess in hindsight they probably wouldn't have got rid of him.
Yeah, so Dan Murray was brilliant for Fax first season, not quite as good last year. And kind of, he was, you know, it wasn't an individual thing. You know, I was saying about it's a workmanlike pack and they had a lot of grafters. But you need a blend of forwards, don't you? You need that really strong ball carrier. You need that one who's going to skittle a few. So Dan Murray was just another one of a pack that was all similar. One had to go. Dan probably made sense for him as well, because, you know, from the travel perspective and everything. And then, yeah, Sod's Law, the week after, they played the London amateur team in the Challenge Cup and they got 3 injuries. Adam O'Brien did his bicep. Will Calcott had a horrendous knee injury. He hasn't played since. So suddenly they were forwards down. And Ben Crook's got an injury that he's only just returned from. You know what you're saying about, you just have those years where everything goes wrong. Facts are just having one of those years where everything goes wrong, and that summed it up. They've never really recovered from that, to be honest.
It's Liam Finn's first year as coach, and I've seen a few comments from people saying, is he right for the job, etc. Is he sort of a bit of an unfortunate, not victim, because he's not a victim of it yet, but is it unfortunate for him that this has happened in his first season in a championship job?
Yeah, I think so, because it wasn't like he came in May and was able to start recruiting a team for next year. He inherited very much what he's got. It's very much someone else's team, this. They've made a few mid-season recruits, and they've done quite well, to be fair. Charlie Graham's done well on the wing, or he's played a bit of centre as well. So, you know, it is just a... It's a storm in a teacup, basically. He's got these issues that he's inherited that he's just having to try and navigate through. Simon Grix as well was immensely popular with the players. And it doesn't matter who you are. If you replace a coach who was very, very well liked with a playing group, it's going to be hard to completely get him to buy in and win them over. So I think there's been a little bit of all of that. And as I said, it's a squad that needs rebuilding, but they're only really going to be able to do that next year now. And he just has to try and navigate through this year as best as he can. And obviously with the way that the championship's working, who knows how that ends. You wouldn't rule any of those teams out of making the top six yet, would you? But at the same time, you're looking over your shoulder and you're nearly in the relegation zone. It's just a balmy year. So
we'll see. We've seen York have strung a few wins together and all of a sudden they're, you know, on the cusp of the playoffs. You've obviously got this situation where the third bottom team is going to be in the League One playoffs. Is there a fear that Halifax could be put in that situation?
Absolutely. Oh, trust me, the fans have been panicking from early doors. I get the impression that maybe just recently, internally, the worries start creeping just ever so slightly. And look, how can you not be? Because it's not like you're in the first eight games of the season, is it? You're way over halfway and you're in that spot. And you look at the fixtures they've got coming up and it's not too kind, you know. So, and now they've obviously lost Zach McComb for eight games, who's been one of their better players. So it's just a bit of a nightmare. Bit of a nightmare. And yes, they absolutely could. But at the same time, you only have to look at what York did last year. They were in the relegation zone, weren't they, with about 11 games left, 12 games left, and ended up storming all the way through. So
Whitehaven did the same as that the year before as well.
For sure. So there's no reason why any of those clubs, Halifax included, can't do that. And as you'll know, facts are a club that seem to defy the odds a little bit. That's what they've done, hasn't it, over the last decade, really. So it seems like a long shot at the minute, and any Halifax fan listening to this will probably say I'm delusional. But stranger things have happened, I think.
What's the position? You know, Widnes haven't been on a great run recently, coming off the back of a win last week against Dewsbury. But there's been some great games between, generally at the Shea, they've been really tight games. There's been, I think, 2 1-point games. I think last year Widnes won as well. And at Widnes, actually, Widnes have played really well against Halifax. But at the Shea, it's always a close game. Is it the sort of game that Halifax are thinking, well, it almost draws a line in the sand if we can win this game and puts us on an upward curve?
I think Halifax, it depends who you ask, or if you ask the fans, they want a win wherever it can come from. They couldn't care if it was against Widnes, Dewsbury, Wakefield. I think Halifax, like many clubs, and probably similar to Widnes in this instance, there's a big gulf between expectation and reality. So you ask all the fans and they'll go, well, we should beat Widnes at home. And that's no disrespect intended to Widnes. That's just Widnes fans would say exactly the same if they played Halifax at home, wouldn't they? So I don't think there would be line in the stand. I think it would just be pure relief. Because of how the league is and how congested it is, the picture can look so, so much different between one win and one loss, can't it? So I think, and that's very much where they're at.
Widnes and, while we've got you on, I want to talk about where Widnes and Halifax sit in rugby league as a whole with the whole IMG situation. Clearly, Halifax started the Super League era as one of the top teams and then relegated in the early 2000s and never really quite got back there. Widnes have had a couple of stints in Super League. Both, in their own way, have shown that they can be Super League clubs in their own right. But ultimately, at the moment, it almost feels like it's impossible for them both to ever get back there. I'd be keen to know your thoughts on both clubs, really.
Good question. So, and I'm sure that this is the same with the Widnes fan base. I have arguments with Halifax supporters, and that includes my family and close friends, who have taken on the opinion that it's a waste of time now, rugby league and championship, because there's no way back, as you say. I disagree. I am begrudgingly supportive of gradings. I think it's a necessary evil at this point. I don't like it. I don't want it around long term. But I pitch it a slightly different way. So Halifax have been in Championship since 2004. Never really looked like getting back into Super League. Why is that? Because they don't have the money to build a team to compete, right? And we can talk, you know, look, you can get a fluke result. How many fluke results have we had, James, over the years of a team getting promoted? Probably London last year, ironically, which is the one year you wouldn't want that sort of thing to happen, but given gradings coming in. But even if you fluke a win, you're going straight back down. And people can argue that all they want. You're going straight back down because you're not set up as a club off the field, on the field. So what's the point? You know, it's not the model for a fairy tale promotion and rise through the ranks isn't there in rugby league. The financial gulf is just too big. So Halifax haven't gone up for the last 20 years because they haven't got the money, in essence, right? We're now in gradings, and Halifax aren't going to go up. Neither are Widnes. Why aren't they going to go up? Because they don't have the money to do all the things and to tick all the boxes they need to do to get up. And, you know, that's putting a team together that'll do well on the field, getting electric, a big fancy scoreboard, whatever it is, you know, minimum requirements on your ground, so on and so forth, da-da-da-da-da. So, but what's the common denominator here? Promotion, relegation, don't have the money. You don't have the financial clout to go up. Gradings, don't have the financial clout to go up. There's no... The reason why you're not going up is exactly the same. It's just the things that you have to do with the money are slightly different. I'm sick to death of, and this is coming and speaking as a Halifax fan. Yes, all right, I'm a Halifax fan. I'm not impartial. I'm sick to death of over the years hearing whoever's been at the front of the club, given that we believe we're a sleeping giant, we're a Super League club in waiting, we have a plan. We're going to be a Super League club again. We're going to make this club great. I've heard it for 20 years, and it's been all talk and no words. I think this makes you be honest with your fans. You either do the talking and you do the walk as well, or you hold your hands up and go, yeah, we are where we are. I think fans have been sold false dreams. I don't know if it's the same at Widnes. I'm not sure if this is relatable or not to you guys. It's slightly different situation.
It's slightly different. Clearly, Widnes have obviously got a much recent past in Super League, but then, of course, have had the administration, and it's more been about a recovery period. I think Widnes fans at the moment would be quite happy to be a playoff team in the Championship because not being able to, not even been in the playoffs since relegation from Super League. I think for me is, money clearly is an issue. I think my issue with it to a point is that our teams being assessed, so say like, and I don't always like using Casford, but I'm going to use Casford, even Salford or Huddersfield or whatever, they're assessed in a context where their financial being is naturally higher than Widnes and Halifax, purely down to the Sky TV money.
Yeah.
So how can clubs like Halifax and Widnes ever get to this, or is it impossible, you know, how can they get to the stage where they can bridge that gap to have any chance of making it back up?
Well, let me give you an example of the club who are going to go up. Wakefield. How are Wakefield going to go up? They've struggled for a decade. Well, not quite a decade. That's harsh. They've been pretty poor for 6-7 years, and they've had no money. They've scrimped and scraped. They've put poor squads together because they don't have the financial clout to do it, and they've eventually got relegated. Do you think, right, if Matt Ellis hadn't have come in, Wakefield would be going back up next year?
No.
They wouldn't. We're coming back to the same. Go on.
But I would argue that Wakefield would have had a far better chance, even without Matt Ellis. Wakefield would have still had a far better chance than anybody else because they just fell out of Super League and they still had that, you know, they've still got the last few years to fall back on, whether it be finance, performance, you know, the digital numbers, the attendances, etc., etc. I still feel like even without Matt Ellis, they would probably have still been up there.
I don't agree, and I'll tell you why I don't agree. So if we look at the clubs that have come down, and we can go back 20 years, we can go back to Halifax. They came down and never went back up. Why? Financial issues. Witness went down, didn't come back up. Why? Financial issues. Now, you're going to point out clubs that did go down and went back up. Hull KR, they had Neil Udjell, a money man. Lee, Derek Beaumont, they had a money man. Toulouse, who haven't quite gone back up but are knocking on the door. Why? They've got money. We're coming back to the same thing every time. So, yeah, I do disagree because Bradford are the prime example. You know, powerhouse club, went down. They had a bit of money after getting relegated that first year. And then what happened after that first year? Gone, finished. Because why? Finances. So for me, it is as simple as that. I do think if Wakefield hadn't got Matt Ellis in, they wouldn't have gone back up. I really, really don't, because I don't think they'd have been able to do the things they've done to get the IMG score, to put the team together that's going to get them points on the field, so on and so forth. So, unfortunately, it don't matter if it's promotion, relegation, or grading, or whatever you want to call it, money makes the world go round. If we bring this back to the question you asked at the beginning of where Halifax witnesses, where they sit in the world of rugby league right now, they sit in a position where right here, right now, in their current guise, Super League's not attainable. It's not. And being a solid, competitive championship club is as good as it can hope for. Does that mean the door's closed forever? No. What needs to happen? They need money men. They need money men to start ticking the boxes, whatever they look like, to get them up. Harsh reality? Absolutely. A tough sell? 100%. You know, no one wants to hear that, do they? You don't want to hear that as supporters of these clubs. I'm saying that as one of them, but it's just the reality of the situation.
There's been a lot of talk, Matt, on social media about there being a potential of 14 teams in Super League as soon as 2026. Do you think we've got the depth of teams to do that? Is that realistic? What's your thoughts on that? Is there any truth in that, or is it just an unknown at the moment?
Good question. They've always said when there are enough strong clubs, they'll do it. Never put a timescale on it. They've said it definitely won't be next year. My concern would more be, well, there's a few things. We all talk about money in the broadcast deal going down. Well, if you have more teams in there, you've got more clubs splitting less money. So I'm not sure how that works. And also the player pool element. Do we have enough players to sustain a good 14-team competition right here, right now? And I'm not sure we do. You know, we're at a point where clubs have approved tweaks to the quota system that make it easier to bring in under 24 Queensland Cup and New South Wales players because they need help getting players in the country because they can't get the top dogs of the NRL anymore. So, do we have the talent to do it? Let's be brutally honest here. We've got 11 Super League quality teams, haven't we? Because London are miles off it. So obviously, Wakefield have signed better, probably have a better squad now anyway, and have signed a better player. So you're back to 12. Are there enough players for a competitive, strong 13-14 team competition? I'm not sure. I think you'd have the finances because Bradford have come into money. Toulouse have got enough money to do it. So you've got 14 clubs, and even Featherstone, after seemingly losing all the money now, seemingly have money again. But I'm just not sure that the broadcast deal is wealthy enough, and I'm not sure the player pool is vibrant enough to make it an actual positive overall, barring the fact you could get rid of loop fixtures, which I think everyone would be absolutely delighted about.
Are you expecting a straight swap Wakefield London?
Yeah.
Are you expecting anything else?
No. I think Toulouse and Castleford will be tight, but I think Castleford will do enough. Castleford fans hate me for saying I think they might have a tight race because they're doing this and that. But the reality is they've got about 2 months left to do all the things they need to do. And they keep saying they're going to do it, and that's absolutely fine. But with respect, I'd rather see it happen than be told it's going to be happen. Going back to what I said about Halifax, I've been sold dreams about Halifax being Challenge Cup winners and Grand Final winners over and over again. So maybe I'm being cynical, but I'd just rather see it before I believe it.
And I suppose if you do, you know, if Casper do stay in, you're then setting yourself up. You've got the same 12 as last season, but then Bradford and Toulouse are potentially waiting in the wings to extend to 14 if you decided to. I think the French teams, the central funding that gets to the French teams is clearly that could be a make weight, couldn't it?
Absolutely. That's a really important discussion in going to 14 teams. Well, it's the key discussion. That will make or break it, let's be honest. If the British club can get some assurances over how that looks, I think it'd happen. Because I think they can see they could see the value overall of the French clubs if it wasn't the finances. I mean, there's lessons to learn from the French clubs. I know some Super League clubs are bemoaning the fact that they're getting really good travelling support, go to Catalans all the time. Well, newsflash, it's because they're giving something different. They're giving an experience that the fans want, rather than, with respect, travelling the M62 on a Friday night.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Saturday kickoff time, I think the Saturday 6 p.m. or whatever it is, that makes a massive difference in terms of...
Oh, for sure. Sure it does. But this is what I mean. We've got to get real about providing for supporters. And this comes, you know, scheduling of Super League at the minute is rubbish.
Yeah.
Rubbish. Like, I think there's a weekend coming up where there's 4 Friday night games. No Thursday and 2 that clash on a Saturday. Like, what are we doing? We're making it hard for people to watch the sport. It's like when we've got games on a Thursday night that are Warrington playing, or Leeds playing away at Warrington like last week. Why are we making it hard for people? It's common sense.
Do you think clubs like Widnes and Halifax, you know, maybe more as a collective, need to focus more on building the profile of the championship as the elite part-time, a bit like how non-league, you know, clearly I do a lot of non-league football. Non-league football over the last 5-10 years has grown massively. And it is what it is. It doesn't pretend to be anything different. Is it a case of maybe you need to say, right, we're not Super League, but we're going to make the championship as good as it can be, and we want to make winning the championship prestigious in its own right? Is there any scope to do that, and is it something you think should be done?
Yeah, they had a chance to get every game shown, didn't they? And voted against it. Not those clubs, by the way, specifically. I can't remember who voted for what. I know that Halifax were improved of it, but I agree with you. And let's be right, mate. If you build a club, if you build a competition that's really, really good, and you are within that, a really good club in that division, well, in terms of getting investors and stuff, you're far more likely to do it, aren't you? Because you're jumping into something meaningful from the get-go, where at the minute there's this stigma that what's the point? You're just signing up for expense. Well, let's make it more attractive. The championship absolutely is criminally overlooked. I prefer watching Championship rugby to Super League. I think it's more unpredictable. I think the brand of rugby is better. So we just got to do more, but you know, we don't know where people are on that debate with should it have happened, shouldn't it have happened, the TV deal. But I tell you what, it'd have brought a lot more eyes on the championship.
I'm a bit indifferent on it, just because I feel like having the games Sunday 3 p.m. I think is massive. Yeah, I think having the consistency of the fixture scheduling, I think that is, and you know, I say this about football, I think why non-league football, lower league football does really well is because every game Saturday at 3 or Tuesday 7:45. And so I'm always a little bit skeptical. Ultimately, I don't think I think before you'd put the championship games live, let's get highlights program out, or let's do something like that that's slightly different than having the games on live, because I don't want to move the games around. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily what they would have done, by the way. But for me, my life's a lot easier having, you know, knowing that every game's on every Sunday at 3 o'clock rather than it being... And I think that's one of the reasons the Super League crowds are going down a little bit, because of all the chopping and changing with the fixture times.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it, right? If you look at the Super League attendances this year, I mean, barring an odd percentile, I think it's actually percentile positive at the minute. They've gone up with every game on TV. Well, there's a lesson to be learned in that. And I think that's despite horrendous scheduling, which will have had a derogatory impact. So yes. I'm caught in the middle of that. I mean, look, I look at it this way. So Sheffield play Friday nights, don't they? Sheffield play their home games on a Friday night. So you could watch a game on Friday night anyway. Toulouse, when they're at home, play Saturday afternoon. Or, well, whoever plays Toulouse plays on Saturday.
Even when Toulouse away, it's
generally So you've got that. You've got all your Sunday free games. If one club would take that, you could pick one game a week. You just played it at 5 o'clock or half five, right? My logic is you play at half five. So all the other clubs will have played at 3 o'clock. You get everyone sticking around. If you were sensible as a club, you get it on in the bar and you get everyone having a drink watching the next game. Yeah. It becomes a habit. If you get people making that a habit, all of a sudden you can make more of your actual home games in terms of revenue, can't you?
Yeah.
And that's only, you know, that's one game a week. One game a week. I agree with you. I think if you're scattergun it all over the shop where you can be playing Friday one night, then Monday the next week, that doesn't work. But from a 3 o'clock to a 5 o'clock once a month, you know.
Yeah, but I do, like you say, I think if we can basically say, right, Super League's going to be full-time comp, Championship's going to be part-time comp, and try, because I think part of the issue the Championship has is that you've always got this bit of a hybrid situation going on where some teams are full-time, some teams are part-time. Is that an issue? I've spoke on this podcast, you know, clear Widnes were doing really well at the start of the season. They were second in the league. And, you know, like normally, if you were up for promotion, or, you know, if promotion was a thing or if winning the league was a thing, people would have got excited at that point and you would have got more people through the gate. But because you've basically been told you can't go up and winning the league's relatively meaningless anyway, people aren't bothered. But if all of a sudden winning the, you know, finishing top of the Championship was a big, prestigious thing to do, it would have, you know, forget promotion to Super League. That'll happen if you do these other things. You know what I mean? Has rugby league gone it? It's almost like a job interview for myself, this, but has rugby league got it in itself to be able to do that to the Championship?
Good question. Hey, look, there'd be much more value in the Championship if you viably felt you had a chance of winning it without, you know, everyone has that belief, don't they? But realistically, does anyone really think they're going to beat Wakefield this year? Did anyone really think they're going to beat Toronto or Lee? So I get it, but going back to the point you made, because of the grading, does that, would they be bothered anyway? You know, if you won it and you got a pat on the back, would you be bothered? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. It's a very, very difficult. Look, the way I look at it is this. You can show me any league structure proposal you want. You won't find one that pleases everyone. It's impossible. We can talk Super 8s. We can talk promotion relegation. We can talk grading, licensing, whatever you want to do. You won't find something that pleases everyone. This concept, 100% grading, it hurts the supporters of clubs like Halifax and Widnes more than it does others. Without doubt, it does, you know. Even more than your Batleys, because I think Batley know what they are and are happy with that. But we talk about expectation, reality. Halifax and Widnes are two of those clubs where the fan bases very much think they are or should be or could be Super League clubs. I think, you know, if the way I look at it is in 10 years' time, if we look at what grading's done for the game, in terms of standards and da-da-da, I think it will have done some good things. It's hard to have that conversation now before you see the fruits of the labour, isn't it? But does it benefit Halifax and Widnes? The only way it would benefit Halifax and Widnes is if someone comes in chucking a load of money at it and wants to make them a Super League club. And the beauty of this system is, if those people were to emerge, there's absolutely a blueprint to go and do it now.
We'll move on and talk about players now, but I guess what you're saying is ultimately, if you want to get into Super League, you're going to have to follow the route of Lee, to kind of where you're building a Super League team in the champion. Well, I suppose Wakefield are doing that this season.
You don't have to, do you? What you have to do now is build a team that will win the championship and build a stadium and everything else. Once you're in Super League, you can start building this way, essentially, can't you? Because if you've ticked everything else, all you really want to do is make sure you're getting your on-field scores to get yourself in. So you need to build a team to win the championship, essentially, or the 1895 Cup. That what I am saying is, if you want to get into Super League, you need someone who's willing to invest a heap of money. But my argument is that under the old guys, you still needed someone willing to heap in, throw in a heap of money to get up and stay up. So that nothing's really changed in terms of what is required. It's just the money has to be invested in slightly different areas now, and it's not all determined on field. But I think at the crux of it, you still just need loads of money.
On players, on the talk around players, is the fact that you've got all this off-field stuff happening, is that the people you speak to, is that impacting on what's available for players? Like, do you feel like clubs are cutting the cloth a little bit, spending less on players to divert it elsewhere, or is it, has there been no change?
Really good question, because I mean, Bradford are just throwing money left, right, centre. So what I would say is the players who are playing for the clubs who know they're not going to Super League, realistically, not as much money for them. But if you can get to a club like a Bradford or a Toulouse or Wakefield, there's more money there. Yeah, there is. There is. Even Sheffield, look, from what I'm hearing, Sheffield have spent a lot of money, but I think there's a move to invest more money into their off-field next year, which might mean that they don't spend quite as much money next year. So, yeah, that's how I would say it. The good thing for championship players is there are probably more clubs now. You know, before it's always been a race between two normally, hasn't it? In terms of, you know, it was Lee and Toulouse and it was Lee and Toronto, then it was Lee and Featherstone and Featherstone and Toulouse. And there's probably three clubs now that are in that, spending the big money, you know, the war race. So there's, yeah. But it's harder for the guys who had not played at those clubs to get as much money as they were before, I'd say.
Do you think, Matt, that the pillars are right that they've got in place? Because, like the criteria, because, like, for me, I think there should be, you know, certain criteria for you to meet and tick boxes before you get into Super League. But, like, for example, you know, one that's been heavily been in the media is the LED boards, but yet some of these clubs, you know, Featherstone want to be considered in the conversation, whether they are or whether they're not, Bradford being the prime example. But you touched on the playing pool earlier, and these clubs are relying heavily on dual registration. Like, surely to God, a club that is heavily relying on dual registration should not be in the picture to go to the top flight.
Completely agree. Academies should be part of the grading, without a shadow of a doubt. You know, it makes me laugh that how many championship clubs, I don't want to put the words in witness's mouth because they might genuinely not have said this, but I'm sick to death of seeing championship clubs say, oh, the player pool's dry, da da da. What are they doing to actually fix it? You know, everyone's just waiting for someone else to do it. At least, you know, I give a lot of credit, it's probably a sensitive club at the minute, I give credit to Swinton, because in fairness to them, how many players have they taken out of the amateur game, put them into their squad, get them playing well for them, competing, and they either stay there or they move on to bigger and better things. You know, Matty Ashton, Lewis Brogan, there's another lad who's playing from now, the centre who's going to Lee next year, I know I've missed at least another two. So, you know, they're looking into a different...
Chris Atkin was probably one who, you know, from back in the day. Yeah.
Way back when Andy Ackers, you know. So they do something about it. They're not developing their own players, but what they are doing is they're giving players an opportunity and you know, they're helping the player pool that way. There are a lot of clubs who are just waiting for someone else to do it and then bemoan it's not there. Well, sorry, newsflash, do something yourself. So I agree completely.
Do you feel it's a consequence of everyone getting complacent, Matt, over the years with the Sky money? Like, so all these clubs, instead of having to do things themselves over the years, whether that's raise revenue, raise finance, generate players, because they've always had this X amount of money from the Sky TV deal, they've got complacent with it, and now that money's sort of drying out, they're a bit lost.
100%. If I can take you back to Halifax, they set reserve grade up. It brought through, in literally 2 or 3 years, a heap of players who went on to play regularly for Fax. Chester Butler, Brandon Moore are two of the better examples. And then they got rid of it. Mind-blowing to me. And now, like every other club, they're moaning that the player pool's not there. Well, sorry, whose fault is it? I think there is a little bit of this as well. And we talk, we're going back into an old conversation here, but I think there's at championship level, there's a lot of waiting for Super League to do it for them. Why aren't the players there? Oh, the Super League clubs, there aren't enough Super League clubs doing enough to produce players. You can go do it yourself, lads. You can't tell me that there aren't local community clubs around that who've got some players that you could bring in. So yeah, there probably is a bit of complacency there. Don't disagree with that.
Do you feel like, you talked about Bradford Toulouse before, being up there. Do you feel like there's a genuine feeling that they feel like they could be in Super League next season?
No. Toulouse, possibly. Yeah, Toulouse do.
Not Bradford.
I think Bradford are understanding that of where they're at. But yeah. I think they think next year, possibly. But they've got so much work to do on the stage. I think you're looking more 2027 for Bulls to be in a position where they could do it.
Because I suppose recruiting, you talked about Sheffield a little bit there. There is still some of that on-field, that on-field waiting in the grading. Like Widnes, to be fair, because Widnes have been poor for the last few years, clearly if Widnes were to finish first or second in the championship for 3 seasons, their score would go up. Nowhere near enough to get up into Super League.
No.
But clearly it's an opportunity for clubs to ensure that they're at the front of the pile by making sure they finish in the top two or whatever. Teams are still going to recruit players to finish high because they still need them points.
Well, let's be honest with it. If you're not doing well, your attendances go down. If your attendances go down, your revenue goes down. If your revenue goes down, you're in real trouble. So clubs still have to recruit teams to try and compete. There's no getting away from that. But you've got this balance now. There's no point doing what's been done in the past and spunking all your money on the playing budget, because if your other bits aren't there, you aren't going up. So you've just got to be more savvy with your money, basically. And I know, in fairness, we talk a lot about, I know a lot of people say, oh, but you get points for a big screen or LED boards and stuff. But in fairness, it is done for a good reason, because if you have them, financially you can get the commercial revenue from the advertising and da-da-da-da-da. They would make you a profit. It is a cost, but it will make you money. And it make you, it's sustainable money that you can guarantee year on year. And that's why they're pushing these things. There is method behind the madness. There is. I know that people can't see it or just don't like the pure principle of sport not being determined on the field, and I completely understand it. But I do think there is good logic behind a lot of the things they do, other than the lack of academy in there and the catchment thing, which I just don't like, because you can't do anything about your catchment.
Widnes are in a peculiar situation where I think the population of Widnes or Holton, which is classed as, it's something like, it was about 2,000 short of It was about 2,000 or 3,000 short of what the figure is. Now, clearly, you can't do anything about that till the next census. So even though them houses are probably being built.
The supporters need to do something about that, don't they? They need a baby boomer, wouldn't they? So,
well, yeah, but the thing is even if they did, you can't do anything about it until 2031 because they won't date it until 2031. So,
true.
Even if there was a baby boom, you couldn't do it.
That would
really probably be an incentive on season tickets if you have two kids, 20% off.
There you go. It'd be proper commitment to your club.
I mean, to be fair, I know you wrote an article sort of asking what was happening with IMG recently, so I'm surprised a little bit. Have they been into you since you wrote that article?
No. I've always said with grading, I reluctantly agree with it, and I do. I do see the value of it. So long, I hope it's not a long-term thing, but, you know, medium-term, I do. But I stand by. What are they doing?
Is there any concern, Matt, of the clubs turning the back on IMG?
Absolutely.
And what, where do we go from then? Because as a supporter, and I speak to many more on a match day from all clubs, and I think the biggest frustration, certainly in the Championship, is every 3 or 4 years, the goalposts change.
Yeah.
And I think that plays a massive factor in attendances as well, because people can't be bothered with it anymore. They can't keep up with it. They don't know where the club's planning because the goalposts are changing. So if we get to that stage, what happens then?
Yeah, well, it's a fair point. The goalposts do change too much in this sport, and comes back to what I said before, we're always seeking the perfect league structure. There just isn't one. And the minute we accept that, we can start moving forward and making some tactical and logical decisions. And I'll reiterate it, and I know it was not popular. I do think with where the sport is at right now, this is the right way to go. It won't benefit everyone. Not in the short term, as we said, clubs like Halifax and Widnes, but I do think it's the right thing to do. However, my main concern with IMG is, you look at the farce that was that England Trans game, this new event that they keep telling us we're getting that they still can't tell us what it is. The general lack of visibility of them and the tangible things that they're doing. That's why I ask, what are they actually doing? Because I just don't know. I don't know. And without being arrogant, if I don't know, I don't know how anyone else is supposed to know.
Yeah,
I'm covering the sport every day.
What gets me is the only things I've ever really seen is, like, I've seen the odd post on LinkedIn where it just seems like they've got interns in who are looking at rugby league. That's my impression of how it's been. I would have thought that they would have had conversations with people within rugby league to, you know, to see what they think, you know, people like yourself, Matt.
If you can find those people, mate, I'd love to know them and interview them, because I've tried and I can't find them. So
yeah. Before we let you go, we appreciate you coming on, Matt, but we've got to talk about players, because you're the probably the only source of transfer rumours relating to Widnes. So Deck Patton was mentioned recently, and he's since left Swinton to go to Featherstone. I heard a murmur recently that maybe his deal, he was trying to back out of the deal going to Widnes next season. Have you heard anything along them lines?
I know Featherstone were of the belief, so I did that story and said it was a unique situation. I know Featherstone were of the belief that the Widnes side of it wasn't completely done. Cards on the table, it's not something I've chased up since. Don't know. But they seem to think that it was something that they might be able to turn around. Would he want to do it? I don't know. I mean, geographically, Widnes makes more sense, doesn't it? I'm afraid, if you've brought me on for this, I'm really sorry, because I can't give you an answer. I can chase up an answer. I just don't have an answer right now.
You can only tell me what you can only tell us what you know. I mean, I think Lee Gaskell was linked to Widnes as well, and, you know, he's another player local.
He pulled out of that, apparently.
I think where me and Mike had the chat the other week, where, you know, Tom Gilmore's clearly on contract next season, and it was a bit of a case of, well, do you see Gilmore and Patton playing together, or is Gaskell a better foil for Gilmore, or, you know, or is there space to get all three of them in? You know, would you play Gaskell in the centres or at fullback or whatever? So you think that's not happening now?
No, from what I was told, there was some talk of that, and then it fell off. That's probably I wanted to say a month ago now. That seemed about right when it started getting linked. Yeah, apparently it went cold. He is leaving Bradford.
I've got one here for you, Matt. I know it's one that a lot of people in Widnes are potentially getting excited about at the moment, is Jake Mason. Now, quite a while ago there was talk of Bradford being in for him. Was that true? How close did that come? And you've just confirmed there it's a done deal at Widnes.
Yeah, Bradford were in, and we're into the end, but he's chosen to go to Widnes. That's happening. There was talk of someone else from Whitehaven going to Widnes. I should know his name. But maybe that's one that I can give you for another podcast, because I don't want to say it on here and get it wrong and then everyone tell me I'm wrong. But it was someone who had connections to Coleman from his time at Swinton.
Romeo.
Could have been.
Well, anyway,
is that a rumor doing the rounds? I don't know. That was one I heard a while back, but I'll be honest, I never chased it up.
What do you think, Matt, of the current situation where players, Widnes have had a couple of players leaving recent weeks. Players leaving, or when players are told they're not on contract next season, or if they've signed elsewhere for next season, and then all of a sudden leaving in the middle of the contracts because they're not staying. Are we seeing more of that, or is that just me reading into it? It's like Mason, for instance, he signed for Widnes for next season. You say, is there any scope for Widnes to get him sooner? It doesn't sound like there is, but why are we seeing it in some situations and not others?
Well, I'll tell you why. A bit of a trick to the trade, this. So certainly at Super League level, and Championship level as well. So when a player is paid out of a contract, they get the first £30,000 of it is tax free. And so obviously there's a benefit to the player being paid out, but there's also a benefit to the club, because they then don't have to pay national insurance and da 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 da. So what you often find, and what it tends to be, is at Super League level, particularly if a club is, they can't make the playoffs, or they're safe and they're not doing anything, or another club wants to bring someone else in and, that guy's not playing, he's already got something tied up. It tends to be able to be financially prudent for both clubs to do it, for both parties to do it, because the player gets tax-free and the club don't have to pay. They come to a figure that works out, so the player gains and the club gains. So that's why, that's part of the reason it financially makes sense to do it. And obviously there's the other element of, simply if it can be done, why not get it done? Sometimes you lose interest. The club just wants to start afresh, da 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 da. But by and large, a lot of the reason is the financial part of it.
Because do you feel there's a little bit of fans getting, if you've got a squad of players for this season and then someone's jumping ship in May, June, or talking about it, ultimately, they were on contract for this year and they're leaving halfway through. Is it a little bit shortchanging the fans when stuff like that happens?
Well, particularly at this level where a lot of the sponsors of players are fans, and then you might only end up sponsoring a player for 2/3 of the season. Yeah, a little bit, but unfortunately, it's business, and you do whatever you can to for the best of your club, don't you, and the best of your squad. So I get it, but it works both ways.
You might have seen me rambling on about this on Twitter. Widnes have got this habit at the moment of starting seasons really well and then dropping off mid-season, as they have done recently. And the only theory really that I've come up with is the May the 1st deadline. Is there any legs in that, in terms of, are Widnes doing something, or are Widnes not handling that situation in the right way, and that's what's maybe impacting them, or is it a coincidence?
I'd have to look into it more closely, specifically to Widnes, but correct me if I'm wrong. They've re-signed a lot of the key players, haven't they, already? So
Gilmore, Owens, and Johnston have re-signed. Gilmore. Yeah.
and they've got some business done. You could argue, should they wait longer to do the business? But let's say hindsight, they had, they wouldn't have got Jake Mason. Mm. So you've got that balancing act, haven't you? I can't honestly dismiss or agree with your theory there. I don't know. It's an interesting question. Is it something to do with the training? You know, are they one of the teams that heavy load training, so they start like a house on fire? Mm. On the flip side, Halifax have historically started terribly and always come good at the end.
And that's quite interesting, because I mean, witness, we've had three head coaches where this has happened.
True.
They've changed the training days.
But in fairness, it's happened to Halifax. Halifax were unbelievably slow starters under Richard Marshall. They were under Simon Griggs. I mean, well, they've started slow and remained slow this year. But I don't know. I honestly couldn't give you an answer. Is it an injury thing? You know, there is a lot said about playing on the artificial surfaces, and do witness get more wear and tear just generally, even if it's injuries we don't know about that catch up with them? I am making up theories here. I can't give you an answer, mate.
An alternative theory, though, to be fair. I don't mind that.
Well, that's what they say, don't they? That, you know, that it's not just that you get more injuries, that they are.
Yeah, it's like the low. Yeah.
But is there that? I don't know. I don't know.
Who are the championship sides are shaping up in your eyes best for next year, Matt?
Next year?
For the business that you know that's been done already?
Good question. It's hard to look past Bradford, isn't it? Just because they're the most active.
Do you think they're going to try and use less than 45 players next season?
Well, it hasn't changed, wouldn't it? Seem to do it every year. Bradford look like they're putting a strong squad together. And it's hard because not hearing a lot out of Sheffield, not hearing a lot out of Toulouse. You know, witness of recruit, I think Mason's a decent signing. Ryan Lannan, we've not discussed yet. You know, Ryan Lannan's going there. And, you know, we're talking about Halifax being a workmanlike pack. He's the guy that really comes in and skittles a few and, gets him some ruck speed. So I think he'll be good for Widnes, and that's a smart pickup. So I think, you know, Widnes have probably not done as much as Bradford, but I think what they've done has been smart. Mason's pacey, so not the best defender, but pacey. So, to answer your question, I'd probably have to say Bradford at this point.
Right, before we let you go, Matt, predictions for Sunday.
Oh, come on. So I'm on a witness podcast, but probably...
Don't
have Halifax mates listening to me. I can't really politically answer...
Going to call a draw.
No. Halifax are low on numbers at the minute. But Widnes are not in great form. History tells me it's going to be a close game. No. This year they normally win when I don't go, and I'm not going. So I'm going to say that Halifax are going to win 14 points to 12.
Oof, low scoring.
There you go.
Right, well, Matt, thanks very much for joining us this week. And yeah, you're more than welcome anytime. Hopefully, if you get some more transfer rumours, you'll have to give us a thumb.
I'll try and get the name of that other Whitehaven fella that I'd heard. Honestly, it came to me weeks ago, and it's only when you brought it up that I thought about it. So please don't take that as gospel, that one, because I don't want people coming and saying, "All right, I'll chase it up and I'll do something on it." But yeah,
leave it with me. Thanks very much, Matt.
No problem. Pleasure.
So good to have Matt Shaw on the show to talk about Halifax and all things rugby league. But as we always do, Mike, let's reflect on last week's performance for Widnes. An overdue win, a welcome win. And I don't think Widnes ever looked like losing the game, but the scoreline probably flattered Widnes in the end. I thought Dewsbury probably give it a a better goal than the scoreline suggests. Widnes run away with it in the end, 34-12.
Yeah, I think it was. I think my take on it was. I think it was a. It was a professional job. I think given the one win in seven, you know, there was always going to be a little bit of lack of confidence in the group, and I think you could see at times we was edgy, you know, some of the mistakes and errors, you know, appeared again. But on the whole, largely, I think we dominated the forward battle. I think our pack was on top for most of the game, and I don't think we was ever going to really realistically, you know, take Dewsbury to the cleaners because of the lack of confidence in camp. And also, respecting Dewsbury just a little bit, a lot of their games this season, you know, they have been in games in the first half, they've just not quite had enough and faded away. And I think, you know, we did see that. A couple of their players are going to other teams next year, a couple are going Featherstone and, you know, Halifax. So they've got some decent players in there, you know, but I thought, from our part, I thought, like you said, we were probably comfortable throughout. I think the introduction of Matty Fozard was really key, wasn't it? You know, I think he really injected some pace and energy around the play of the ball. But not just that, Jordan Johnson again dropping back to loose forward. He was absolutely fantastic again. And we've spoke about his defence and his ball skill at loose forward, but at times he was running it in like he'd been shot out of a cannon. He really got us on the front foot. He's going from strength to strength in that position. So
I think the good thing, I mean, we talked about with Matt about top end championship teams and top end championship players, and you know, Jordan Johnston struggled a little bit last season, having made that step down from full time, but he's now, you know, he's now looking like a player who's one of the best part-time players that there is. He's delivering week in, week out. I did the report for League Express this week, and I give Matty Fozard man of the match. Clearly, Hooker's a massive strength for Widnes at the moment, which is good. It was a shame about Jordan Williams. I mean, he had a great impact. The very first tackle of the match, he rocked his man and forced the error at the play of the ball. And then I think his first carry of the game was really got the crowd's appreciation. It was just a shame that his spell was ended early, and it looks like it's possibly a bad one.
Yeah, I mean, the word in the bridge suite after the game was he was travelling back down south to get some treatment and assess what was going on. But for anybody who went to London away last year, their forward pack absolutely took us to the cleaners, and he was at the front of that, and we seen it straight away. He's got, for a big lad, he's got plenty of pace. He takes the ball in really quick and really physical and really fit, you know, and it would have been a massive benefit to keep him for the 2 weeks, and it would have been lovely to keep him longer. It was a real shame, but it didn't knock us. And another player who was fantastic to see back, and we're a better side with him in the team, but it's keeping him fit, is Callum Field. You know, his aggression, he adds that in abundance, his defence, and he carries the ball hard as well. Cal's problem, unfortunately, is, you know, putting a consistent run of games together. And if he does, you know, we've got a forward there who, you know, he's not the biggest in the world, but he's got a heart of a lion, and he's coming at the right age as well. So it was really good to see Callum Field back as well.
Yeah, of course, Widnes had a few missing at the weekend after the Swinton game the previous week. I know that Alan Coleman had hoped to have Joe Bullock maybe as an option, but of course, he's now left Warrington on loan and gone to Salford as part of, I guess, a bit of salary cap manoeuvring to bring Luke Yates in. So that was one that was maybe certainly beyond Widnes's control. It'd be interesting to see if there are any other new faces brought in. We did see another new face in Zach Bardsley-Rowe, dual reg centre from Warrington. That was his first, first professional game. And he did all right. He was strong. He was a good one-on-one tackler, I thought. I noticed he had blood pouring from his knee in the first half, which is probably a bit of a 3G pitch breaking in for him. But I thought he was solid enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for me, I said last week I had reservations of us getting another player from Warrington again. So it was really nice to see that, you know, that relationship isn't broken, because whilst we still have a dual registration partnership with them, there's clearly some talented players there for us to get the, you know, the fruits and the benefits from. And, you know, Zach on Sunday, I think for me, if you're going to have dual registration, that is the perfect type of player to have on dual registration. He's young, hungry, he's got his future ahead of him. So his idea is to get into the Warrington team, and to do that, he needs to play well on loan, and it's down the road. And I think he did that. I think what really impressed me as well about him, because I thought for the first 15, 20 minutes, we didn't really see much of him. And he come in field and took a really big carry in. And I really admired that for somebody so young, because he was like, he was trying to affect the game. And then I think he really grew into it in confidence. We've seen some lovely touches. And I think that tackle at the end in front of the North Stand, that got champagne moment in the bridge suite. He didn't half rock and rock the Dewsbury attacker, that's for sure. You know, so he's clearly got a big hit in him as well. And I think if we can keep him, you know, hopefully that'll kind of hopefully maybe finally answer our centre problems, and he can grow. He can certainly grow and get better.
Yeah, it was a good tip pass for Mike Butt's try as well that he put in. In terms of, I saw Paul March's interview after the game, and one quote that I pulled out that he said was, "It's playing on this surface, lads aren't used to it, and it's taking its toll." Now, I flagged that up at the time. I think I tweeted it on Sunday. But I suppose it, with what Matt Shaw said in the chat before about, you know, is the pitch potentially what wearing Widnes down mid season? It's an interesting suggestion. I don't think there's a way you can prove it, and ultimately there's not really much Widnes can do about it. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can't rule it out, can you? You know, it's been a conversation for many years, hasn't it? And I think certainly when we first got the pitch, there was talk of certain players maybe not signing for the club because of it. But on the flip side, if we're to keep it balanced, I know a lot of these sides now, I detect a little bit of sour grapes from Paul March there and a bit of desperation, because I know a lot of clubs train on these surfaces, and I know there's one right behind Dewsbury's ground, so I think that might have been a bit of an overreaction, because you'd assume when the weather's bad that they train on it. And then secondly, Sheffield, who in my eyes as a part-time outfit have probably been the most consistent in the last couple of years. I know Featherstone are technically part-time, but I won't go into that. But you know that they're certainly in the past been high paid players playing part-time there, such as Joey Lallea. But Sheffield have really stayed consistent and really been knocking on the door of the top two, and you know they've done that playing on a artificial pitch. So it's certainly a talking point. I'm not totally convinced personally, but I suppose you'll never know, will you, really?
One other talking point, two other talking points, I guess, from the Dewsbury game was the two yellow cards. I'll nail my flag to the mast. I thought the Dewsbury one was harsh live, and I've seen the video since, and I'm still, I think it's a penalty. Well, I think it's a penalty, but I still stand by. I think yellow card's harsh for that. I think he hits Gilmore and his upper arm. And because of the angle of the tackle, it then makes it look worse because he goes over him. Yeah. I think it's probably a penalty in this day and age, but I thought the yellow card was harsh for him.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. I was stood on my feet, you know, at first, you know, going, you know, wanting a penalty, not for anybody to be sent off or anything like that. But when the heat of the battle has been taken away and you do watch it back, I do agree. Do we really want our sport to become soft? I don't think so. There's going to be some knocks and bruises. It's part and parcel of rugby league, but I suppose this is where the game's going. Somebody who was sat right next to me actually made a valid point, which I think he was 110% right without us being able to prove it. But this is where I'm worrying the game could be going a little bit, is he said straight away, if he stays down, that possibly could be a red card. And I don't disagree. I think sometimes when a halfback stays down, the referee without the cameras are petrified and they're scared of not making the correct call with these new laws in place and rules. And I think that's what's happened where he's given yellow. I think he's been probably pressured into it himself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of decisions he made where there was one in the first half where the Dewsbury lad sort of stayed down and he was in the middle of playing the ball and then he sort of stopped and didn't play the ball and decided he was hurt. And then somehow in the time difference between him getting treatment on, a penalty was awarded. Well, if he'd have just played the ball, play would have gone on and that penalty wouldn't have been awarded, which I don't really like to see that sort of thing happening. I'm not saying the Dewsbury player was playing for it, but you'd like to think, well, if you've made a decision, you make a decision. You can't, and just because you've got a little bit more time to think about it doesn't necessarily mean that you should change your mind. The Sam Brooks one, I think the Sam Brooks one doesn't happen if the Dewsbury fella didn't get sin-binned. I think he elbows him, and I think it's silly. Now, don't get me wrong, I feel like the Dewsbury players were holding on to him too long, but that doesn't excuse him lashing out an elbow towards one of them. I think ultimately, if Dewsbury hadn't just had a man sin-binned, I don't think Brooks gets sin-binned. The worry for me is that Brooks being sin-binned 2 weeks running. And at that time, I think it was 12 all at that time, or it was 18-12. What could have been a 10-minute, comfortable 10 minutes for Widnes then turned into a 12-v-12 situation.
Do you know what, James? You've hit the absolute nail on the head with all of that. You know, it was soft, but at the same time, that is two in 2 weeks, and both have probably been a bit stupidity. And look, this is one example. It's not jump on Sam Brooks's back. You know, he's obviously frustrated and done what he's done. But I think if we're talking about the silly mistakes and shooting ourselves in the foot, that is a prime example of it was just needless, and that could have. That 10-minute period could have put us out of sight. And then, you know, like we've seen in the last 10, 15 minutes, you know, where, you know, Tom Gilmore and Keenan Brand, that lovely try at the end, and Fozard getting even more space. We could have had that maybe a little bit earlier. So there was elements of the game where we were shooting ourselves in the foot, and that was one example. But you are absolutely spot on. I don't think that decision gets made if the Dewsbury play goes off. I think that's one of them where he blows the whistle, and we've seen it many a times, and the crowd get frustrated by it, where the ref blows the whistle and it's almost like separating two boxes, where he goes and speaks to them. He goes, you get back in the defensive line and you go and play the ball, and everybody carries on. Really, that's probably what should have happened, you know.
Yeah. We will hear from Alan Coleman post Dewsbury match very shortly. John Lawless has kindly supplied the audio from Alan at the weekend, so we'll finish the podcast with that very shortly. But before we say goodbye, Mike, it's a big run of games Widnes are going into now. Well, they're all big, of course, but away at Halifax on Sunday, and then it's the home game with Bradford at the end of July, but then August, Whitehaven away, tough trip. Widnes struggled there in recent years. Featherstone at home, Wakefield away, Sheffield at home. There's no sort of easy games in that run. Probably not a great run of games to go into when you're a bit out of form, but what are you expecting to see over the next 6-7 weeks?
I have absolutely no doubts we're going to see plenty of effort. The players are going to absolutely give it their all. You know, we've seen that. You know, we haven't lost games through effort. That is absolutely crystal clear. You know, I think the Halifax game next week, you've got to take it a game at a time. That's crucial. It's crucial to get two wins together for that then real difficult period. You know, people will look at the table and see Whitehaven where they are at the moment. But we all know a game in Whitehaven is really difficult, and we've come unstuck there many a times. I think we've got to get the confidence back. We need players back. We can't be changing the side 4, 5, 6 players at a time. You know, we need some sort of consistency to win some of them games. But if we're being honest, I think these sides like Featherstone, you know, when they're coming to our place, we've give these sides a real good game away from home. We've lost the games where you could have quite easily won them. But because of where we are now, because of form, when they're coming to our place, it's got to be right. Well, it's got to be the next step now. We've got to be taking some scalps off Sheffield, you know, when Sheffield come to town, when Featherstone come to town. And we've got to go at Whitehaven with the belief of this isn't, you know, in-house, you know, this is a tough game, but this is one that, you know, we are the better team in, and we need to be professional, and, you know, the silly mistakes need to stop, and we need to go and put a professional performance in. Whether we get the results is another thing, but I think this week is a real important game for momentum, and it's been a happy hunting ground in Furness of recent years.
Yeah. You almost sounded like a coach in the first part of that, Mike, so well done for turning that round towards the end. Yeah, certainly the Halifax Witness have done very well against Halifax at home, and then the games at the Shea have always been pretty tight. For me, it's 6 games. I think you'd be happy to come out of the 6 with 3 wins, in my opinion. You've got 3 home games, 3 away games. If you can win your home games, Bradford, Featherstone, Sheffield, I think you're happy with that. But at the same time, if you manage to pick up a win away at Halifax or Whitehaven, that then gives you a little bit of wiggle room. I think if Widnes can do 50-50 from now to the end of the season, I think that'll be enough for the playoffs, and that's ultimately what they're trying to get to. So fingers crossed. But Mike, thanks as always for your company. Please do leave your comments. I know we've got the Facebook group going, Widnes Rugby League fans, and Widnes Rugby on Twitter as well. Or tweet me at JDG Sport as well. You can leave comments and reviews on whatever platform you listen to the podcast to, and we'll pick them up as well. But we'll leave you this week with Alan Coleman, who is speaking to John Lawless.
Alan, I just heard you lads singing the victory song, and it's been a few weeks, so must be a bit of a relief to you.
Yeah, it's just it's been tough for a couple of weeks, I'm not going to lie. I'm on paper over any cracks. We found it really tough. This week at training, we couldn't train on Tuesday. We were just busted to hell, and it doesn't help motivation when it's like that. And you know, we've had some help from other clubs, which has been massive, London and Lee and Warrington. So I really appreciate them. A massive thank you to them. But today, I think you could see a team that was quite frustrated with how the victories, how the performances have gone against us for 4 weeks. And then I think you think, oh, they're trying too hard. We were trying to, like against Batley, trying too hard. And, you know, we spoke at half time about being composed, being smart, and then just a couple of minutes we concede. But I think they showed a real togetherness today, an hunger to win, and more than anything, for the club and the fans to get back to winning.
Talk a bit briefly about the loanees. We didn't get a big look at Jordan Williams because he went off injured, unfortunately. But the brief look we did get, he put in a couple of good tackles and a couple of good drives.
Yeah, he's a great player, and you know, that's a frustrating bit for us. We don't know what he's done. He doesn't look great, and the medical staff will sort that. And I think he was really gutted about it. But like you said, the first contact of the game, he rocked Elliot Morris, and I don't think Morris was the same after that. And he's carrying near the line, he's coming onto it like a juggernaut, and he nearly scores. And unfortunately, he just said his leg went under him, he felt something go. But yeah, disappointing for him, because he would have brought a lot to us.
Yeah, and the young boy in the centre, whose name I'm about to remember, Zach Barsley-Rowe, did some good stuff, particularly defensively for you, I thought.
That's his first proper professional game now. Mm-hmm. He's played for Warrington, I get that, but a first competitive professional game, and that's superb from a young man like that. I thought he didn't look out of place. His defence was superb at times, how he read and how he came out, and his second efforts and his desire. and he's carrying the ball. He was really tough, you know, and for somebody like that to play in that kind of game and environment, if anything, he's going to get better.
Callum Field back after a while today, came off the bench and I thought provides you with a bit of impetus.
He was brilliant. Thought he was brilliant. We've missed that. We've certainly missed that. You know, my thought process is he's getting Louis Brogan off the bench and he comes on when people are tired. But Cal did the same. And Cal's probably a starter, but he's been out that long. It's important we bring him back slowly. So I just thought we've missed his effect. He cleans up, he tidies up, he carries, he's aggressive. He's just a smart player and, you know, we've missed him.
I say this to you every week and you're probably getting bored of me saying it, but it's true again, another sterling effort from Jordan Johnston, other than obviously going off with a few minutes to go. Many carries, many tackles, and just an all-round tough performance.
Yeah, he's just the ultimate pro. You know, somebody just said, can you imagine him being 6'2"? I said, if he was, he'd be the best player in Super League end off. And we've just got a really special relationship, me and him. You know, we've really clicked. I think, you know, we speak about 3-4 times a day. He's just a winner, a born winner, and he's playing busted though. You know, he's not really fit, to be honest. He certainly plays with his heart on his sleeve. I brought him off just for Beyonce, so I'm more than anything. If we could have gone in front a little bit earlier, I would have probably brought him off earlier. But yeah, he's everything about this club at the moment.
Your other dummy half coming off the bench had some good moments for you as well. Got over for 2 tries and made some very important defensive players, I thought.
Yeah, Fozzy, he just comes on, he brings that energy, you know, and we've missed that. We've had to play JJ at 13 start, Foz. But now we said no matter what, now we're going back to what worked for us, and that was JJ to start and Foz coming on when defences are probably fatigued and vulnerable. And I thought he read the game really well today, Foz. Apart from one which I'm going to go mad at him about on Tuesday, but he knows what that's about. But man, you can't fault him. I think he's certainly the highest scorer in the comp. He's not far off the top scorers in the comp, so he's always worth a try for us.
Good to come on with a wet sail, wasn't it? I mean, the game, they kept it within 10 points for most of the time, but at the end though, you just got the impression if we'd have played another 5 minutes, you might have run in a few more.
Yeah, we spoke at half time regarding getting to 60 minutes where we felt as though we'd probably flip the game on its head. They're a really good team, I think. They work so hard for each other, you know, and for what they have and what they're about, they deserve special credit. And they've done that with everyone. They've been winning at half time in most games this season, you know, and I feel sorry for them at times just because I've been in that situation in recent years and it's tough down there. But yeah, credit to them, they were good. And the only thing for us is we picked some more injuries up, which isn't great. So we're just in a position at the minute where you can't feel sorry for yourself, but we are in a bit of trouble with bodies. You know, we're really low. Basically, we've got 14 fit players in our squad. The club's working hard, but not many teams won't let anyone go. That's the difficult bit, you know. But fingers crossed we get a couple more back next week. Jack Owens hopefully will be okay. And we'll just have to see what happens, to be honest, more than anything.
There's a couple of sin binnings today. I have to say, I thought both of them were a bit on the harsh side. It was something and nothing that the referee picked out. I don't think Sam Brooks will have anything to answer for his sin binning, will he?
They're not releasing him. He's trying to play the ball. His arms are swinging. If the ref calls Els earlier, they release, but they don't. So I think he's very unfortunate for that. I think those he's very lucky it's just yellow. I'll be totally honest with you. You watch it back. We watched it back and direct contact to the head. I'll be honest with you, I don't like saying this. I've never said it once this season. I don't think he had control of the game. I'm being honest though. Thought he stopped and started the game too much, and when you do that as a referee, you're inviting situations to come. They started getting a bit sloppy at the ruck and trapping to the ball and hands in, and it's hard to referee when it's like that. So you know, I think it's probably not one of the best performances in my eyes today.
Halifax next week, you're short on bodies. We know they're probably, at least on paper, they're going to be a tougher test than Dewsbury were today. Players, can they get a result there?
Of course we can. You know, I think it's important you stop that rot. We've certainly stopped that. Is it going to be much tougher? Of course it will. But there'll be a little bit less pressure on us, just because the pressure, you're at home playing the bottom team, you've not won. People expect. But we know that Dewsbury's as good as anybody in the comp on the day. So that was difficult for us, but we got over it. We just said then as a group, you know, that's, it's done now. So it's focus all week and where we weren't great, so where we can be better, and hopefully go to Halifax and get the win.
Alan, well done today and good luck next week.
Thank you.